Got a real treat for you today on Book Corner, especially if you, like me, love the sport of baseball, you love the history of the game. Here's a story that I really wasn't familiar with until Rick Huhn introduced me to it, and it's called The Chalmers Race. The book is The Chalmers Race, Ty Cobb, Napoleon Lajoie, and the controversial 1910 batting title that became a national obsession. It is from University of Nebraska Press, and Rick Huhn is now joining me today on Book Corner. And Rick, first thing I want to do is welcome you in. Great to talk to you.
Well, thanks, Tony. I appreciate the opportunity.
And I love guys like you who have a passion. I can tell from reading your work that you are extremely passionate about the sport of baseball and about baseball history.
Well, thank you, and I think you're accurate about that. It is a passion of mine as a young boy, and then I've carried it up through adulthood, and now that I'm a little bit older, I have more time to devote to it, so it's really become sort of an avocation, I guess.
And before we had gotten started today, we were talking away from the air, and you were telling me that you were an author of a book on George Sisler, also a biography of Eddie Collins. And just out of curiosity, as I read through this book, I thought, you know, I love the sport of baseball. How come I didn't know this story, this race from 1910? How did this come to your attention?
Well, actually, I started out thinking that I would write a book about Napoleon Lajoie, the old Cleveland baseball star. I was doing some research on that, and I got a little bit sidetracked when I got to 1910 and started reading about what I call the Chalmers race. It actually was the 1910 batting race in which Hugh Chalmers, an automobile magnate up in Detroit, offered an automobile to the batter with the highest batting average in baseball. So from there, I started delving into it and realized that not only was it exciting in that it was one of the first times any valuable had been offered to a sports player of any sort, it also was sort of an ongoing controversy that really had never been totally resolved. It was really the closest batting race in all the history of baseball from 1901 on. So I thought it made a story, made an interesting story, and so I dropped the Napoleon Lajoie biography idea. Somebody since then has written one, and took up the gauntlet for the batting race of 1910.
What a different time it was. Now, as a little boy, each day waking up, having the box scores on Sunday, laying out that newspaper and poring over the box scores. And a young person listening to us today would go, what are you guys talking about? I have it on my smartphone as soon as I wake up in the morning. The thing I love about pieces like this, when we look back just 100 or so years ago, what a different world we lived in as far as statistics went. And your story illustrates this.
Yeah, there was quite a difference in not only in the way statistics were kept in baseball, but also the people that actually scored the games. The scorekeepers, the scorers were totally different back in that day. They were chosen by the teams themselves, and they were sports writers. And one thing you have to remember back then, the main avenue for people to get any kind of information about baseball was from their newspapers. And the various cities had more than one or even two newspapers. Some cities had seven or eight, such as Philadelphia or New York or Chicago, the larger cities, St. Louis, Cleveland. They all had multiple newspapers. And so what they would do is the baseball teams would select one of these sports writers, and he would be the official scorer of the game. And then his scores and the way he scored plays might be different, sometimes remarkably different than what some of the other reporters did with their scores. So you might have different box scores appearing in different newspapers, and only one really being taken into account as the final score for the official score for any game, any one game. So it really made for some interesting issues, a few of which were taken into account, at least in my opinion, when baseball's rulers, the National Commission, decided to accept an offer by Hugh Chalmers to have an automobile to the winner of the batting title in baseball.
And when Chalmers decided to make the offer and then baseball subsequently accepted his offer, do you think they realized the type of circus this was going to create? Because it seems like, I remember a part in your book, they had come to the point where they had said, we are not doing this ever again. We're not going to accept something officially for this batting title, at least the folks that were alive then. There's no way they could have known what a circus this was going to turn into.
I think that they had some misgivings, at least when they went back at the end and all this ruckus went national. They did look back, some of them, and say, we did have some misgivings, but I think they honestly thought that everything would take care of itself. In previous years, the batting races had not been that close, and of course, we have to remember that the two-league system only began in 1901, so this was only, what, the ninth or tenth year that there had been batting races in both an American and a National League. So there hadn't been any real controversial batting races to that point, and I think that they thought they could escape and get away with it. Then they would revisit this again at the end of the year.
Let's talk about the two main characters in the story. Lajoie, who you've already mentioned, Ty Cobb. You couldn't have two more guys that were at opposite ends of the spectrum, could you?
No, and that's the other thing that really caught my eye. When I noticed that the batting race had really come down to a two-man race and the two people that were involved were Polian Lajoie, I guess most people would consider the first superstar for the American League and maybe the first superstar of, as I just pointed out, the two-prong major leagues with American and National. He was very, very popular, won batting titles himself, and he was just sort of the fans' favorite, not loved by the sports writers, but highly regarded by the sports writers and very highly regarded by not only his teammates, but all the other players in the American League. He was kind of the old guard, and on the other end of the spectrum was sort of the new guard in Ty Cobb, who was just his polar opposite in many ways. He was a man who had a lot of prejudices, did not hide them. He wore everything out on his sleeves. He was very combative, liked to fight. He was not liked by his own teammates, definitely not liked by the other players, loved by the Detroit fans, but not the fans in any other city, and the sports writers certainly regarded his ability, but outside of Detroit was not universally loved either. So you just had, on one side, a very popular player who was nearing advanced age for a baseball player, and you had this young upstart who had won the last three batting titles and had played in three straight World Series.
And what's interesting as your story goes, track it through the summer, fans, depending on where they were, had their favorites. Everybody had somebody they liked or disliked, but for the most part, Ty Cobb, that said, was such a polarizing figure in his day, and you talk about this towards the end of this race now, that these official scorers help shape what occurred in this race, and I couldn't help but think if Ty Cobb would have been a little nicer or a little more gregarious or just a decent human being, that the race could have ended up being different.
Yeah, I'm not so sure as for the bulk of the year whether or not Ty was getting the short end of the shaft, so to speak, but towards the end of the year, certainly the last couple of ball games before the fateful doubleheader of October 9th, I do think that there were a couple of questionable calls that went in Napoleon Lajoie's favor and really made a difference. It wasn't so much that they were ruling against Ty Cobb as I think they were favorable towards Lajoie towards the end when they realized that he was just a few hits behind Cobb, just needed a little help to perhaps wrest the title away from him.
Do you feel like in your research that the baseball establishment at that point in time, there had to be a sense there that, hey, Lajoie would be a much more deserved or a more of a guy to carry the banner for our sport, and win this automobile. Do you think any of that was in play here? Did you find any of that in your research?
I'm not so sure that that was in play so much as far as from the baseball ownership or really even from the sports writers as much as it turned out it was from the players on one particular team, the St. Louis Browns.
Mm.
One of the problems as the race went on really goes back to the way statistics were kept in those days and this difference in scorekeeping that I mentioned. That is, nobody really knew for sure who was winning the batting race as it came up to the final few weeks. And it went back and forth as the season went on. Most of the other contenders had dropped off fairly early, which is something I didn't know about when I started my research. I thought it was going to be a battle to the end with a lot of different baseball players. It turned out really it was just these two, and certainly perhaps the most interesting pair, as you mentioned earlier, that you could find. And so as it came up towards the end, I don't think anybody really knew for sure who was doing what at the time, but it looked like Cobb had forged a lead going into that last weekend. And so I think that's when things started to cook up a little bit, and maybe some things started happening as early in the weekend, and then it exacerbated when Ty Cobb decided that he had won the title and was safely ahead with two games to go. He left town. They were playing a series in Chicago. He left and headed back east to play for an all-star team that was preparing the Philadelphia Athletics for the World Series of 1910.
It's so interesting. That part of the book, I found myself saying, because I didn't cheat. I didn't want to know who won. I wanted to read the book through, take the subject that is as you presented it, and I have to tell you, I could not believe what I read in terms of the way the folks in Cleveland, the manager on the other team that was opposing Lajoie, it just seems like such an injustice and almost disgraceful. If Ty Cobb wasn't so unlikable, I probably somewhere would have felt sorry for him. When you did your research, were you surprised by the level of just chicanery that went on there in that final series?
Actually, I really was surprised, and I don't know that does come off as the more honorable of the two players. When you look back on it, how he handled everything, but he had really caused himself some problems with many players in the league by leaving early. It was just looked upon as almost ungentlemanly with the batting race as close as it was that he would have not played the last two games in order to preserve his batting crown and to win that automobile. Yes, I was surprised at the chicanery, but I also think that Cobb brought on quite a bit of it himself by his actions and leaving early. And yet he was more the gentleman of the two when everything came down and it looked like perhaps the title had been wrested from him through some really questionable play on the part of the St. Louis Browns.
The Chalmers race, or Chalmers race, as it's pronounced. Rick Hune's our guest, and Chalmers was a car company, a gentleman that was trying to make a name for himself, went to the folks over the major leagues at the time and said, hey, I'm going to offer you this car for your batting champion this year. They thought, hey, why the heck not? Little did they know, 114 years later, a book would be written on it. We would still be talking about it to this day because the race became a national obsession, as you say. And how would they have been cognizant when Cobb left his team and basically said, as you would say if you were playing blackjack, hey, I'm holding here at 20. How would word have traveled?
Well, I think it was in the newspapers, for one thing. It was a four-game series that each team was playing over that last weekend. The Cleveland Naps, and actually they were named after Napoleon Lajoie. They weren't the Cleveland Indians yet. That came later, but they were the Cleveland Naps. They were in fifth place, and they were playing the lowly last place St. Louis Browns in St. Louis. I believe that the word got through probably through the newspapers, was picked up. There may have been some contact between players, but it probably just came through the newspapers. As I said, there were a lot of newspapers. Each newspaper might have had two or three editions during the day, a morning edition, maybe an afternoon or a late edition. So it was highly likely that the Browns players, and certainly the Cleveland players, since they were following the batting race at that point, would have known.
Let's go back to that four-game set, and specifically that doubleheader. When folks hear us talking, they would say, now, what was so unseemly about that doubleheader?
Well, he batted nine times during the two games. In the first game, the first time he came up, he swung away, and even though the ball may have been misplayed by the rookie outfielder, he had swung away, hit it hard, and it was a line shot out into the outfield, and he ended up with a triple. That leads me to believe that at the start of the doubleheader that Napoleon Lajoie was not thinking that any of this was going to go down as it did. His second time up, he kind of gave a half swing, or what we might call a swinging bunt, to the shortstop. Again, I'm not sure if at that point in time he noticed anything unusual about the infield positioning from the third baseman, but he did hit the ball to the shortstop and beat it out for a hit, although there was some question that the shortstop, a Hall of Famer Bobby Wallace, threw the ball kind of lazily over to first. But it was that third time up when he looked down at third base, and by that time he could see the rookie third baseman, whose name was Red Corridan, was almost stationed in the outfield. He was right at back of third base, almost on the outfield grass, right on the edge, way, way back. And on that third at bat, that's when Lajoie bunted down the third baseline, and he beat it out that time easily, and then each time thereafter he bunted the ball down the third baseline. And except for one time, which was a controversial call, at least in Lajoie's opinion, one time it was called a sacrifice, all the others were base hits. So at the end of the day, in his nine at-bats, he had gone 8-for-8 in the doubleheader, and with the one sacrifice, it didn't count against his average. And most people thought that he had won the batting race at that point.
And of course, the numbers are unofficial, and when the numbers do finally come in, they show what?
When the numbers finally came in, and they were released by the league office, they showed that just by the narrowest of margins, that Ty Cobb had won the batting race.
Disaster averted.
Disaster averted, at least in many ways. A big sigh of relief from Ban Johnson, who was actually the man that most people think was in control. They called him the Czar of baseball back in 1910. He wanted to put this whole matter to rest because there was quite a furor over what the Browns were alleged to have done in positioning themselves to allow all these bunts. So he wanted to put this matter to rest because nobody was paying attention to the World Series, which was coming up, and that was, of course, as it always has been, baseball's showcase. So anyway, yeah, there was a huge furor, but it was all put to rest very quickly, at least as far as the time being, and not until later on did we realize some other things were going on.
As a historian, do you have a similar thought that I had in reading your work as you unearthed some of this, which is, gee, I wonder how many other records from yesteryear need to go back and maybe be revisited in light of this?
Oh, I think there's many, many records, especially during that time period. The record-keeping was probably difficult at best. For the first few years, they didn't even have anybody that was officially in charge. It was handled by the league secretaries. There was a league secretary in each league, and they would handle this. Statistics were kept on individual sheets and team sheets, and even in trying to look at them today, it would be very easy for figures to be interposed. And so, no, I think it's been fairly well acknowledged, and many of the figures were corrected over the years, at least in the last couple of decades, as better analysis was made and we had the use of computers and things like that to help us out. There's a lot of baseball records that are probably inaccurate. This one fell right in the middle of that whole mess.
Yeah, in fact, this thing stunk so badly that you unearthed some accounts of the home folks there who came to see a record. They wanted to see this guy win the batting title. They were watching a second division baseball team there in St. Louis, and a team that we, through history, came to see as a perennial cellar dweller in the Browns' and they wanted to see this guy get the record, but not in that manner. They even some of those folks turned, didn't they?
Oh, yes. What started out, first of all, as you mentioned, this was a last-place team, and as it turned out, this final doubleheader drew the largest crowd, I believe, of the year. It was around 10,000 people to see two also-rans play. So they were there to see Napoleon Lajoie, and they wanted to see him hit the ball, and they cheered wildly the first few times up. But when it became apparent what was going on, there started to be a murmuring in the crowd, some catcalls and things like that, and there were a lot of people very upset. A lot of people wrote in letters to the editor of the various newspapers, and the local St. Louis press just went crazy. They really were upset, and they wrote it up, and I think they were that really instigated the furor, because the Cleveland papers, they were kind of apologists. It was like, well, these things happen, and Lajoie's a terrific player, and he's deserving. Of course, Detroit was terribly upset about the whole thing, but they also had to admit that their player had left early and perhaps caused some of the problems himself. But it was the St. Louis press, and many of them were spurred on by the reaction of the fans as the two games went on.
And again, we live in such a different age today with all the TV cameras, Twitter, camera phones, et al. Something like this never happens today.
No, in fact, with a doubleheader like that, they might have stopped the game either in the first or early in the second game or between the two games and straightened things out that this wouldn't happen.
Rick Kuhn is our guest here as we talk about the Chalmers race, Ty Cobb, Napoleon Lajoie, and the controversial 1910 batting title that became a national obsession from University of Nebraska Press. And Rick, from your end, if I make you czar, how should baseball handle this issue of the 1910 race? Because for the most part, they've stayed away from it.
Right. I do feel pretty strongly, as a person who spends a lot of time with baseball history, that we should have a factual record of baseball statistics, because one of the things that makes baseball so fascinating to so many people is that it is a game of statistics, and we can look back and compare various eras and those who we honor by their statistical feats. So it sets it apart from some of the other sports in that statistics are a huge factor in why people love the game. So that it's important to have an accurate record, an accurate historical account of the game. So when we do find errors that have been made, there definitely was an error made here in the 1910 batting race, we should correct that. The problem that arises with this particular matter is if you correct the batting records of Ty Cobb and Lajoie, and in this case Ty Cobb in particular, Lajoie ended up winning the batting race and not Ty Cobb. Yet Ty Cobb was wrong by the way the Browns played the game, and to some extent probably the Naps as well. So how do you handle that? And the way most people have come up with, and the way that I would agree, is to keep the batting title with Ty Cobb. You can't really go back now and change that. But for anybody who would look at a statistical account of the batting race, Lajoie should have the higher batting average because of a mistake that was made in the record keeping. And that way you'd have an accurate record, but still have the batting title with Cobb. And it's important to Cobb because he had a string of batting titles, and you would hate to have that string lost. So my way of handling it would be to keep the batting title with Ty Cobb, but to have an accurate record. And we have made changes, I should say. Major League Baseball has recognized errors and made changes in a number of other instances. And yet for this one, they refused to do so. And it may date back to the fact that Ty Cobb's hit total would be changed. And that was a sacred statistical record held by Cobb for many years before Pete Rose broke it.
And I'll offer you one thought, and I'd like to get yours. What a great piece of marketing by Mr. Chalmers. Here's a guy who had a fledgling car company. 114 years later, he's a footnote in automotive history, and we're talking about him today. Not bad. What do you think?
I think it was great. He was a marketing guru. He's an interesting study in and of himself. He was a young, up-and-coming executive with the National Cash Register Company out of Dayton. He's a native Ohioan, and he was doing so well and was so well-liked by the people at the company that when they had some problems with the head of the company, they wanted Hugh Chalmers to represent them in bringing their gripes to the boss, so to speak. The boss didn't take it well and basically dismissed Hugh Chalmers. He was so well thought of, and his marketing skills were so well regarded or so highly regarded that some young entrepreneurs in Detroit brought him up to Detroit and gave him part ownership in what eventually became his own automobile company, the Chalmers Motor Company. And so he was a baseball fan, and he was so into baseball and such a marketing nut that he put the two things together and came up with this plan to have a car as a prize for the top batting average. And as it turned out, he got national coverage from that. And although, unfortunately, 4 or 5 years later, his company was taken over by another one, eventually became part of Chrysler Corporation. But for those years, sales went up, and there actually were 4 other vehicles given, Chalmers vehicles, but never again for just winning the batting title. It became more of a most valuable player award after that.
Hey, Rick, really wonderful spending a few minutes with you. Give me a final word here on this subject.
I hope that anybody that would take a look at this book would realize what a great game baseball was back in the early 1900s and why it existed and why it was the national pastime back in those days and why it's still a popular game today, even though we have other sports that certainly have challenged and I guess in the NFL have surpassed it in many ways, that the reasons why this is a great game, the controversies that live on through the years, make for many, many stories. This is just one story that you could pull out of the pages of baseball history and hopefully make for enjoyment for the baseball fan and of today and maybe future fans, some of the youngsters that take to the game as the years go by.
Rick, I tell you, you succeeded in that end with me because I found myself not knowing. I didn't want to cheat myself how the story ended. Let that story develop and tell itself, and you did a wonderful job with that. And I appreciate you joining us today on Book Corner, and hey, best of luck to you with this and your future endeavors. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Tony, very much. I appreciate it.
The Chalmers Race, Ty Cobb, Napoleon Lajoie, and the controversial 1910 batting title that became a national obsession, Rick Huhn, H-U-H-N, Rick Huhn. You can check out this book, and it's available from University of Nebraska Press. And this concludes another edition of Book Corner.